Jaspreet Boppadai and Don Nicholson with Greenwashed on RCR, Reality Check Radio.
You're back with RCR Greenwashed with Don and Jaspreet. And because we've had several interviews in past months with regard to coastal management and the adaptation that may be being encouraged by for climate adaptation around the coast of New Zealand, we thought we'd get back to talk a little bit more about the Kapiti Coast Council's work. And we have with us Sean Rush. He's from Sean Rush Law and Policy Limited. Welcome, Sean. What's the latest happenings on the Kapiti Coast that you can tell us? I know you live there, so you'll know, you'll be man on the spot.
Well, I've got a batch there, Don. My mum and dad live up there. So the latest there is we are getting feedback from the Ministry for the Environment that that they will continue to advocate to use what's known as high-end climate scenarios in terms of planning. That means that you're using a model that is extreme. It includes things like the ice sheets melting in the next 100 years. And as a consequence, you end up restricting a huge amount of land for development, for renovations. And insurance companies start thinking, well, we're not going to insure there because the council thinks it's all going to be underwater in 50 years' time, sort of thing. So we've been sort of like working with Simon Court from the ACT Party, who's got a willing ear on this. He's an engineer by background, civil engineer. And, you know, what we're doing is advocating for what the law actually says, which is to use a likely climate scenario, which has a much more sensible sort of outcome when you run it. So anyway, I mean, things are coming to a head. We hired the Waikato University to do a report, which we will be delivering to the City Council or the Kapiti Coast District Council. And that's been prepared by Dr. William DeLonghi, who I have shared a podium with at Reality Check Radio. And William's going into things that the Ministry for Environment aren't talking about. Things like the coastal currents and how they deposit landmass on our coast. And things such as the accretion trend, which has been going on for 6,000 years, making my house on the coast more insulated and protected from coastal inundation than ever. It is the safest it's ever been to live on the Kapiti Coast because the beach keeps getting closer and closer to Australia. And we've got photographs that prove all this. We've got shipwrecks that happened in the late 1800s, which are now high and dry and safe on land. So we're looking forward to presenting that. I do think, though, that this is all being driven by the Ministry for Environment's determination to continue using totally implausible models, which tell a really scary story. And that means that the councils have to get a coastal type of report, a couple of $100,000 for an engineering firm with some climate change emphasis. NIWA, are also being contracted. GNS are part of it. You've got all these institutions who are now adopting the Ministry for Environment's guidance, which by the way, some of them wrote. And actually cleaning up a lot and not actually producing anything of real value because it's all based on sea level rise, which has been happening for thousands of years, shows no real sign of acceleration. In fact, the IPCC said in their last report that we don't expect to see an acceleration due to human activities till at least 2050. So why are we doing anything different to what we always used to do, which is take an assessment of what's happened in the last 30 years, project that forward, and then have another look, say, every 5 or 10 years.
It makes no sense. You look at that, and we are having council do the similar around our coast. here in Southland. We are hearing the same around now Nelson, a large amount of properties there. And one has to wonder what's happened? How have we come to the stage where a handful of people are hell-bent on driving this policy, whereas the evidence in front of their eyes no longer matches with what they are modeling? Like out where Don and I are, the bluff tide gauge hasn't moved, but supposedly the seas are going to rise and swallow everything here. How have these institutions been so captured that we have reached this stage where everyone's got their eyes closed, fingers in the ears, na 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 na? That's like I can imagine a child going like, I'm not seeing anything, I'm not hearing anything. What happened here?
Oh, I think it's a bit of the money go around, in combination of a bit of intellectual laziness. As a lawyer myself, and having worked for major organizations that were prime targets for law firms, I know exactly how they operate. They come to see you, we'll do a presentation, we'll put some nice nibbles on, or maybe a few drinks afterwards, and we'll tell you how the government's plans are going to be disastrous for your business. We can help you. We'll get you through it. Give us a call. And that's been happening with not just law firms, but the big accounting firms as well. They're all into the climate stuff, right? So now they all have a division. We're climate change lawyers. And they don't want to give that up. The last thing they want to hear is that, well, actually, the climate hasn't changed much. James Renwick, the head scientist at the Climate Change Commission, well, he wrote the piece about New Zealand and New Zealand's future in the fifth assessment report, saying that we've got these very, very important and influential weather systems that come and go at random. That's the El Nino weather system, the Southern Annular Mode, which is controls the polar vortex. So last week we all had a freezing week, didn't we? Well, that wasn't because of anthropogenic climate change and greenhouse gases, because the polar vortex and the Southern Annular Mode oscillated a bit. So we had this massive drop in temperature, way more changes than anything than an increase in greenhouse gases will do for New Zealand. Similarly, what's known as the interdecadal Pacific Oscillation, which what that does is send a current of warm water all over the Pacific, a bit like a long El Nino, can last for decades, increases temperature. In fact, that seems to have started the global warming scare in the mid-70s. So you've got these big, climate scientist Jim Salinger recently referred to them in a lecture I went to, very good one, by the way, called the climate dogs, and they bark loud. And so James Renwick in the IPCC report said, we're not going to really see the anthropogenic signal this century because of these massive weather systems that change our climate seemingly at random.
But
So,
Sean, none of your fellow lawyers in these activist groups like the Lawyers for Climate Action, I doubt they'll be able to explain it nearly with the finesse that you did here, but they seem to be upping the ante on the present government, saying that the government is reaching the Net Zero Carbon Act, and the Minister for Climate Change is not doing his due diligence. And that is what worries me here. It's like people can keep saying anything, but these institutions, no one is listening. 2 days ago, this weekend just gone, we had the Minister for Climate Change put forth this declaration that they have tied up with the New Zealand Centre for Sustainable Finance to develop financial taxonomies, which is essentially a taxonomy for anyone who thinks this is still the biological classification of the animal kingdom, as I did. It is a way to decide which activities, economic activities, pass muster to lead a country into the net zero nirvana. So, and when I look at the partners of the Center for Sustainable Finance, with which our government has done a partnership, it reminds me of SDG 17, public-private partnerships. Their partners are Ernst & Young, KPMG, Rabobank, Deloitte, all of these, and all of these institutions are also partners of the World Economic Forum. So can I conclude from this declaration by our government tying up with the Center for Sustainable Finance that our government is essentially a partner of the World Economic Forum? Is that drawing too long a bow, gentlemen?
No, I mean, I think the World Economic Forum has always had, first of all, the World Economic Forum has done a deal with the United Nations, so they
yes.
signed up to support and
the sustainable goals, yeah.
They are a body that are populated by some of the wealthiest, most influential organisations in the world, and to think that that's not got a political element, I think, would be naive. They have set out a climate governance structure, which has now been adopted by the Institute of Directors here in New Zealand, and that's and all around the world. So they are telling businesses all around the world to adopt these principles, the net zero stuff. You know, it would be so great if it was true. And when I say that, I mean by the energy that fossil fuels deliver to ordinary New Zealanders and could and should be delivering to sub-Saharan Africa and impoverished states in Southeast Asia, but aren't. You know, if we could replace that with wind, with hydrogen or with something else, and I'd be all for it. In fact, that's why I went and studied for a master's in climate change science and policy, was to get behind, to be one of those champions. But I found there's just barriers. And like the fact is that KPMG know what side of the bread is buttered. They do most of their work for government, right?
Yep.
Big client is the government. Same with the law firms. You got the top three here in New Zealand, which is Bell Gully, Russell McVeigh, Chapman Tripp. I see Chapman Tripp's part of that group. They know what side of the bread is buttered as well. You know, government wants us to sing the net zero song. We'll sing that. Sure, we can do that.
Yep.
They all have their groups. And, you know, they've done it with anti-money laundering as well. They did it with competition law in Britain. That's when I first started noticing this sort of stuff, the Transparency International stuff. I mean, you know, these are all things, but the unfortunate thing from my perspective anyway is that as much sustainable funding as you might want to have out there is all well and good, but if it is backstopped by wind farms, it's going to fail.
Look, isn't it interesting? It's I call it people with no conscience that are pushing this agenda, because I actually cannot work to fat myself out of legislation. I just can't. I want to be in the open market. I want to be have unrestricted access to markets is what I want. But in the big scheme of things, these meddlers are finding a way to ingratiate themselves, build their balance sheet, spread their investments, and it's not unusual for human nature to do that. Why can't governments see that all they're doing is looking after their some big time mates, basically? I mean, that seems naive,
yeah,
but that's how I see it.
Look, you know, we all want to do the right thing for each other and for the planet. You know,
Fair enough. No one's
suggesting otherwise. But what we also need to do is put bread on the table for our families, and sometimes that there's a conflict there. Well, you can tell government that you're doing one thing. You can publicly advertise stuff, and you know, greenwashing is now becoming a thing. But privately, you're there to make money and put bread on the table and have, you know, time off of the weekend, maybe go to Fiji, which is what I did last week. But, you know, what we're in danger of, though, is institutional capture. So, you know, the Law Society recently went out to its members and asked about what principles should we adopt for ethical lawyering in the climate change space. Well, I don't know what
That's
happened, but I put a submission in anyway, and that didn't go anywhere, so it stopped. But the Institute of Engineers, the New Zealand Law for Society, they've all got these now adopted principles around climate change. And you know, the institutions like the Geoscience Society, you know, the geologists, you know, it's unfortunate that it's not, it's basically allowing the propaganda to take hold in our institutions. And those who actually like surveyors, like geologists, who actually know better, are too scared to say anything. They won't get the contract from the council. I mean, I'm lucky enough, but I will not be employed by a major law firm, despite the fact that I've been a partner and so on. But, you know, because I'm prepared to stand up and speak out about this sort of stuff, and that would be awkward. All our councils have adopted all this sort of stuff. You know, the climate emergency was described to me quite appropriately by one of the senior executives at Wellington City Council as a, she acknowledged it was a political statement. And that's fine. We can all make political statements, but don't make policy on it. You don't start believing your political statements and start spending money on them. But that's what's happening. And, you know, you can turn a blind eye to it and do what I did, which was get off the council and go back to private practice and insulate yourself financially from the stupidity that's going on. But you do sort of think to yourself, well, there are people who are doing it really tough, and our councils are making it harder because it's more expensive to build. You can't build in places now because of climate change. You've got to put much more insulation in, which is, you know, we should have done anyway. But, you know, and our rates now, my rates are now at $300 a week. I mean, that's about the same cost as, you know, as a rent. Yeah. So that's double what it was when I moved into this place in 2013. And now, and a lot of that will be because of the sustainability team. Now, they talk about sustainability, it's a nice word, but actually there are some, should we say, extreme left wing politics involved in what they call sustainability, locking up areas of land, protecting. We like to talk about protecting the environment, but actually the, you know, Marxist philosophy was protecting it by not inhabiting it, locking it up. And Lenin, when he took over in Soviet Russia, that's what he did. And people starved because they weren't allowed to farm the land that was there and could have been used to grow crops. So, you know, you've got, yeah, I mean,
I mean, the
I think
council
it's
to
a bit of a
which.
rabbit hole to go down, but the sustainability principles do lead you to a point where we can't expand and grow our population in the way we'd like to. It very quickly leads to the so-called anti-growth agenda. And there are people who articulate their issues around growth, this exponential growth that can't go carry on. That's just Malthusian economics from the 18th century, which has been proved over though every time has been disproved as being factual because we managed to do things like use combine harvesters now to grow our crops. And we use fossil fuels to create fertilizer,
A
double
friend
the
of
amount of.
mine says sustainability, and I agree with that. She says the sole sustainability nonsense, if I have to put it into one line, it is why we can't have good things, which is why how the left decides that we can't have good things anymore. And I agree with that. And the council to whom you are paying $300 a week in rates, Sean, I don't know where you live. It's like the Buckingham Palace. I don't know where you live, but it also employs two behavioral change specialists. And they are tasked with, the council's website says, enthusiastically embracing, get, they're tasked with making us, so the people, enthusiastically embrace new ways of moving.
The sustainability team are all about behavioral change. And I just think it's a disgrace that you'd actually hire people whose task it is
It's
to
to
have
change
community
behaviors.
meetings and teach people about how to live their lives. You know, I mean, my goodness, the Catholic Church tried that on me and they partially succeeded. but, you know, the vow of poverty and chastity didn't work for me. but, you know, But you know, I think Wellington City Council's got 35 staff, full-time staff. One consultant they brought in when the Let's Get Wellington Moving blocks were coming to a head and we were going to start announcing what the final look of the project was, they bring in this consultant to teach us to have courageous conversations.
Oh my
And I said,
God.
this is a $6.4 billion project that should sell itself. I don't expect to be off. Am I going to be delivering bad news to these people? Damn right I was. You're going to like convert the Mount Vic tunnel into a cycleway. Well, I just said, I'm not having that conversation with my neighbours in Rosneath and my Taitai. I don't want to be that courageous. I said,
Is
and
it?
I refused to attend the workshop.
Good on you. Isn't that
Ridiculous.
interesting how we talked about the dog analogy before with Jim Salinger, I think you said. And you know, in a farming sense, we have hunterways, we have eye dogs, and we have backing dogs. And they all have a place when you're rounding up stock. Actually, the humankind around Wellington have been treated by these behavioral people, people trying to influence you. They're sort of like a pack of dogs, and they're actually trying to head you, they're trying to hunt you, and they're trying to make sure you fall into line with the backing. And it's only people like you, Sean Rush, that are going to actually help us stop this nonsense. So look, great we've had you back on for an update from your side of the fence. We need to draw this to a close, but please keep in touch on these very issues because we've been talking about them now for 18 months in our own way, effectively. So every person has a sort of different way of talking about them, but we're on the same sort of platform. Understand, we're still same sort of understanding, and we've got to talk about it. Otherwise, these people on the other side will get out of the pen. They won't be corralled like we have been now. We need to corral them instead of them corralling us. And all power to your arm. Thanks for coming back on RCR Greenwashed.
Cheers, Don.
Thanks, Sean.
The RCR shop has great gift ideas, from great-looking tees, hoodies, caps, tote bags, bumper stickers, and more. The RCR shop is now open at www.realitycheck.radio/shop.